Now, lending institution financing, the next one is intermediate credit, as we go down to Section 3 here. And we're talking about loans that are basically 1 to 5 years. We're using it for capital, for other than temporary needs. It's used to purchase equipment, existing businesses, provide additional working capital. Again, we're trying to get up to 5 years. And although I say a range of 1 to 5 years, most of the loans we work on are 5-year loans. While the loan's in force, you'll have restrictions on managing your business to protect the lender against drastic reductions. And a lot of times, bankers will go down and visit your business at least once a month. What we try to do is set it up so that we see our bankers once a month, maybe have lunch, and then take them over to see the business. And you're going to find then at least the business is going to be running the way it normally is. If you leave it up to chance, I guarantee you, every time the banker walks in, it'll be that day of the month that everything got screwed up. I don't know why that happens, but it does. The other thing we should be talking about here on lending institution financing, once you start to think that you want to start a business, buy a business, or maybe you want to expand your business and you're going to need bank financing or institutional financing, what I'd like you to do is go down to the bank and start to get to know some of the bank officers. Have coffee with them, have breakfast, get to know them, play golf, whatever it happens to be. And give yourself lead time, maybe 3, 4, or 5 visits. Get to know them. And the reason for that is it's the same as your negotiation between buyer and seller. It is very difficult for a bank officer to sit there and feel good about the loan you're asking for when they just met you. It makes it a lot nicer if you've gone in and laid the groundwork. You've done your homework. And again, you're just being nice to your local bank officer. And again, bank officers like to make loans to people they know. They like to make loans to people they trust. And I should have made this number one. They like to make loans to people that can repay the debt and repay it safely, which is the key to working with bank officers. Because they don't like risk, and I understand what they're talking about. The next thing is we go to 6.9 on lending institution financing. We'll talk first of all about equipment financing. And you're going to find in a business, you can go to a bank or a lending institution, you can borrow money against the equipment. It'll be secured by the equipment. And again, I'm just giving you averages here, and it's going to vary year by year. It's going to vary by the equipment, and it's going to vary over the place. But generally, we're talking about borrowing about 50% of the appraised value. You're going to find as you become more knowledgeable in business, you can figure out ways to borrow more than 50%. But 50% is what we can get. You're going to find there are techniques to borrow more. The next thing is the inventory financing. You can usually, again, borrow about 50% of good inventory. Many institutions are wary because of control problems. You may be able to minimize a problem by placing the inventory in a bonded or controlled warehouse setup. When you do that, we have run into banks and lending institutions over the years that will go up to 80 or 90% of the value. What are the lending institutions looking for? Security. In other words, they'd like to know that if they're going to lend you the money against an asset, that they're not going to get ripped off, that they're going to be repaid. Accounts receivable financing. In this, we already talked about this generally, you pledge or assign all or parts of your accounts receivable security, and you can borrow a percentage of the amount pledged. In some industries, you can borrow 50%. We find nationally the average is about 80%. Okay, so you can borrow against your receivables. And incidentally, you're going to find that you can borrow against the accounts receivable when things are going bad. We've seen companies borrowing on receivables when they're going down the tubes. As a matter of fact, most of the accounts receivable that we run into the United States, these are companies that are in trouble. Why are people able to lend money against receivables or even buy them from you? The value of the receivables has nothing to do with how well your company is doing. What it has to do with is how good are the people that owe you money through the accounts receivable program. And if they are good for it and they've been paying on time, that means it's something you can borrow against easily, that you can finance easily. It's a good source of cash flow for your business. But I do want to tell you one thing, it's a danger area. Because once you can start converting your receivables to cash and doing it immediately, many business owners become very weak. So we'd like to suggest that you use that as a last resort, unless you're in an industry like the garment industry where it's a way of doing business. But in most categories, we find it's a danger sign. Accounts receivable factoring, it's something we mentioned before. In this area, a person called a factor buys all of your accounts receivable as they arise. They're purchased at a discount, and the cost can be very high. But keep in mind, what they're doing is buying them here. They're buying them from you. So instead of borrowing against them, you're actually going in and selling them to somebody and receiving cash from them the next day or a couple of days later. Borrowing on contracts not performed. Now, this is an area that a lot of people are not aware of, that you can borrow on contracts that you haven't performed on yet. Because on accounts receivable, you're really borrowing on what? On something that's already been done. We're now talking about borrowing on contracts not performed. But the thing you have to keep in mind, you can't go to normal lending institutions. What you're going to have to do is go to your Yellow Pages and look up other financing companies. And these are companies that maybe charge a little more. But they're not the banks that do this. Very few banks that I've ever run into get involved in this area. They like to borrow on something you've already done. Or lend you money on something you've already done. You're going to find that you have to go to regular finance companies. And they're listed in the Yellow Pages. And if you go to them, you're going to find the rates are really not that outrageous. And they're very nice people. The next category that we're talking about on 611 is a line of credit. An internal formal understanding, or it can be informal, between a businessman and his bank. The bank agrees to grant loans up to a maximum amount, often unsecured, used in business with a seasonal need for short-term funds. Again, we're talking about the example here, a retail store during the Christmas season. Now, what you may do is you may just decide you're going to go out and have working capital, which means you're going to have $100,000 sitting there all year. Now, if you happen to be in a business where the $100,000 is only required maybe in October, November, and part of December, why have that money tied up there continually? And you may find it may be better to have a line of credit, which means you go to the bank, talk to the bank, and they will grant you what we call a line of credit, say up to $100,000, which means you can borrow against up to $100,000, and you're really only going to be charged based on how much you borrow, which is a very good way to go. It also helps you to develop a better relationship with your bank because that's required to get that line of credit. And incidentally, if you do get the line of credit, use it. Because if you get one for $100,000 and don't use it, you're going to have a hard time getting it again because the bank's in the lending business and to make money. Once you've used $100,000, then you're going to find if you've been a good boy or a good girl, you can go back maybe next time and get $120,000 or $150,000. And the way to build up is your ability to borrow or line of credit is once you do get the credit, use it. Use it. Line of credit on home. And this is a new program that just started recently. And you're going to find that a home is used as security for a loan. What will happen is they will take a second mortgage or a trust deed for security, usually not third position. They want to be maybe in second position. You pay an upfront fee and then a percentage above prime on the money borrowed. Now, you're going to say, well, gosh, why are you saying that we should get a line of credit against our house? Well, if you're in an existing business and you have a short-term need or maybe you want to have this available just as a backup, just in case something goes wrong, I suggest you think about this. A lot of you there out there that are buying existing businesses and you're living in a certain level home, maybe a $100,000 home, when you go out and buy a business and say the business is making $150,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 a year, I hate to tell you this, within a few months after you own that business, you're not going to want to live in your small home that you were satisfied when you were making $25,000 or $30,000 a year, and you're going to buy a larger business. But again, you know my feeling on using your home as security. It's a court of last resort, and usually it means that something's wrong with what you're doing in business. But again, there's nothing wrong with having a little extra backup, a little extra protection. Usually when you do that, it doesn't happen. Warehouse receipt loans. We've talked about this, and here's the definition. The inventory is delivered to a professional warehouseman and stored on the premises of the buyer. The receipts are issued to the buyer to give the bank as collateral for a loan. When the orders are received, the borrower will buy back from the bank enough warehouse receipts to fill the order. So it's a bank financing device. What we talked about before was using a supplier, and the main difference we have here is we're paying the supplier normally no interest, which means we don't have a cost on it, or we're paying a very nominal interest rate, which is a lot less than you pay at the bank. Floor planning. We've talked about this before also, but not with the definition. We use this to finance inventory such as autos, appliances. Dealer has possession of the merchandise, but the title remains with the lender. In other words, you'll have the possession, but the bank will have the title. When you, the dealer, sell a unit, you pay the lender the amount due. Very, very easy. Again, what I was saying here is sometimes when you're working with the person that's leaving the goods there, they will allow you to floor plan, and they'll do it and not charge you anything for the first 60 days. When you're working with a bank, they charge you for the total period. The next category is 613, and we're talking about lending institution financing long-term, because what we've been talking about so far is basically terms up to 5 years. Now we're talking about loans from the Small Business Administration, and we do this. We're talking about getting loans that'll go maybe 7 or 8 years or 10 years. And you're going to find as you look at this, you're going to find that these are guarantee loans. And what will happen is, again, right now, at the time we're recording the tape, the government was, under law, guaranteeing these bank loans for up to 90% of the $500,000. So 90% is guaranteed by the government. The government over the last few years has been talking about raising this to $750,000, so you might watch out for this. Now, the loans, again, are usually for 7 to 10 years. They're usually 2.5 to 2.75 over prime. And for those of you who think these are very good loans, before you go to the Small Business Administration, even though that great book you bought told you to do it, I suggest you look at every other source. Now, before we get down to some of the problems, let's just tell you that most of you think that just banks can provide this financing. But you're going to find that Control Data has a number of business centers around the United States. Yes, that's Control Data, the computer company. And they have business centers around the country. They're very nice people. And you're going to find that they provide financing. They will work on SBA guarantee loans. And they are easier to work with than the banks. You're also going to find there's a couple of stock brokerage firms, and one of them is Dean Witter. And they are also able to provide these loans. Okay, and they usually process them very fast. The thing you're going to find in working with a bank, they tend not to like that, those type loans, and they end up taking quite a long period of time. For those of you going after SBA loans and you want to go through a bank, if you're in the Midwest, East Coast, Southeast, you're going to find a lot of SBA loans available. As you get to the West Coast, most of the banks here provide loans at the same rate or less without all the other red tape. So most people end up just going with straight bank loans. Now let's look at the requirement here. You have to have evidence of the ability to operate the business successfully, so you have to have some track record or bring somebody in with you. You can't finance 100%. They have requirements as to how much you have to put down. And you're also going to find they want additional security, your home. In fact, you're going to find in most cases they want everything you have. So you're going to find that maybe it isn't as good as you thought. And as you know right now, for the last few years, the government has been trying to get out of the loan guarantee business, and we're just going to have to see over the next couple of years how these programs do. But you're going to find in most cases the people that work with me or have been through our different programs stay away from government financing. Why? It takes too long, it's too difficult to get, and there's too many strings attached. Besides, there's too many other ways of doing it. The next page, 615, we're going to be talking about equity financing. Now, the thing I want to mention, that I should have mentioned sooner, is the fact that in this chapter, as you go through the book, especially up until about 615, you start to lose more control and the financing becomes more costly. Once we get into the next miscellaneous sections, you're going to find it varies by the type of financing you're going after. But generally, the financing that is closer to the front of this section, if you just want an easy rule of thumb, is the financing that's going to give you the best cash flow as a buyer. Now, next category we said here, under equity financing, we're saying venture equity high-risk capital. In other words, these people are coming in, they're willing to come in under more high risk. A bank doesn't want risk. So what you're going to find is these people are going to want a piece of the business. Now, you're going to say, well, gosh, I don't want to give up a piece of the company. Well, let's analyze it. Would you rather own all of a company that makes $50,000 a year, or would you rather own 51% of a company, control, of a company that makes $500,000 a year? This enables a lot of you that maybe would have started with a smaller company to start with a lot larger company. And believe me, it's better, not exactly starting at the top, but it's better starting in the middle than it is starting at the bottom. It's a lot easier. First category we have are small business investment companies called SBICs. And they're, again, listed in the yellow pages. Or you can go down to the reference section of the library, and they have books that just cover all the SBICs in the country. These companies provide equity financing. They buy stock outright and convertible debentures. And C1 down below describes a convertible debenture. They also make long-term loans. We're saying 5 or 10. We've seen a lot of them longer than that. And for those of you that need bank guarantees, in other words, somebody, the bank wants a guarantee or a cosigner, you'll find people in these companies will do that for a fee and a piece of your company. They're privately owned corporations, licensed and regulated by the Small Business Administration. And what happens is they go out and raise funds. They make loans to people like you and I. And then what they do is, based on the loans they've set up and how much risk's involved, they're able to go back to the Small Business Administration and borrow additional funds from them based on how much money they have out. And the government then lends them the money at very favorable interest rates. They then relend it back to people like you and I at a little higher interest rate, and on the spread, they make a very good living. There's a lot of these companies around. In fact, those of you that are going to banks, and the bank turns you down and said, look, we'd like to lend you only 20 or 25% of the value of the company. You want 70. We'd like to stay 20 or 25 because there's not risk there. If you want to work with that bank organization, what you ought to do is ask them if they have a division, an SBIC, which is a joint venture or a risk division. And you'll find that most banks over the years, the larger companies, larger banks, have set these up. And you go to them, and although the main bank that is not in the risk business turns you down, these people will say, gosh, we will lend you 70%, but we're going to want a certain percent of your company. In other words, they want to share in the action, too. The next area, Minority Enterprise Small Business Investment Companies, MESBICs. They specialize in lending to minority-owned businesses. They're also privately owned corporations licensed and regulated by the SBA. In other words, they're minority SBICs. Venture capital companies. Again, if you want to find the venture capital companies, if you go to the library, they have all sorts of books on venture capital companies. They specialize in different types of lending. You're going to find, though, that although they have a glamour name and they're nice people to work with, you're going to find in most cases today, unless you really have a lock on your company and put up a lot of money, they're going to want controlling interest in your company. The worst or the best that's going to happen is they're going to buy the stock outright or buy convertible debentures, which means they can convert then these debentures to control in your company. Okay, what we're saying here in Section 1 is they're convertible to common stock of the corporation at agreed upon terms. In other words, they can convert them later and end up kicking you out. We don't like situations like that. We like control of our companies. They specialize in their areas of expertise. They usually want control. And as you go to the different books that list these venture capital companies, they're going to list who the officers are, who to contact, how much money they'll lend out, how much they have available, what kind of companies they lend to. And don't write to them. What I want you to do is give them a call, go over there, talk to them, and have a package ready on what you're trying to do, showing them how you're going to repay it, what you're willing to give up. In other words, act professional, and don't try to shotgun. If they're going to hit four of them, spend the time, spend an hour or two talking to these people. And be prepared before you go there, because these people are very successful people, and they're going to be lending money to things they're going to make a lot of money on. Local development companies. These are local corporations whose main interest is expanding local industry or attracting new industry. They're usually in smaller areas where there's not a lot of other funds available for business. No one individual may own more than 25%. SBA loan limitations are a maximum of $500,000 for each small business. And what you're going to find is maturity up to 25 years. And you're going to find that over all the years, although I've heard somebody working with one, I've never gotten any details on it. I myself have never personally had the opportunity to work with them. One of the last categories we have right in this general category is a thing called going public. And again, the investment banking houses will handle the details. And what you should do is discuss in detail with all of your financial advisors. And you also don't do this at the last moment. Give yourself a year or two to start doing the publicity and the other things involved. And what I suggest you do, if you have a good company and a good product, I suggest you go with one of the better investment bankers. And even though they're going to charge you a lot more, not a lot more, but more than the smaller ones, you're going to raise the money a lot faster. You have more chance of raising it. And then as you need more funds in the future, you're working with the top people. So I recommend going that way. As you turn to 617, we're going to start getting involved in other financing methods. And the first one is a thing called a joint venture. I'm sure most of you heard about that. Again, joint venture is usually for a year. Sometimes it's for 2 or 3 years, but it's a limited life. Because most people getting involved in a joint venture that have the money really don't want to have something going on for too many years because they like to roll their money into some other investment. They don't want to tie it up for too long. An example like this, what we could have is we could have Party A. They're the manager, the owner. Usually they don't have a lot of assets. Party B would be the joint venture, which is the investor, the investment owner. So you have two parties. And the second party, which is Party B, ends up being what we call the silent partner. Again, the cash partner usually wants some control. But as you get involved in this, you're going to find maybe they want 25, 30, 40. It's going to depend on how weak the person is that's going to the person with the money. There's some hard noses out there. And again, I'm not criticizing. I'm saying I would be the same way. They're going to want control as a silent partner. But for those of you going out to start for the first time that don't have a lot of money or need money to expand and you have to give up something, keep in mind one thing. Most of these people have a buyout clause, which means although you may be giving up more than you want to in the beginning, you're going to have a chance to buy them out in a year, 2 years, or 3 years. And again, why pass up good opportunities just because you're looking for an absolute? There are no perfect tens out there in business or in financing. So what you're going to have to do maybe is give a little away in the beginning. Again, if you don't give away in the beginning anything, what you're going to find in most cases, you don't accomplish anything. So be prepared to give away a little in the beginning, and then as you become stronger and wealthier, then you'll be in the control situation. But you'll never get there if you don't bend a little. The next area, the limited partners. And what we're talking about is setting up a limited partnership. And if you happen to be the person that we or somebody else is raising the money for, you, the buyer of the business, or maybe the person wanting to expand, or the person starting a business, would be the general partner. We would then put together, or you would put together, a group of limited partners. Now, again, with a group of limited partners, you're going to find that they basically have no say in management, and that's what the law is. You're also going to find most limited partners want to get out in 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 years. So you have a buyout. And even though you may have a situation where you have people in with you, remember, they don't have a say in the business. And if you want to have absolute control and own all of it, you're going to have the opportunity in the next couple of years to buy them out. And this gives many of you an opportunity with limited funds to either expand or buy a company to buy something larger as your first stepping stone. Again, main thing is the buyer ends up with the business and the control, and also that your investors make out. They end up getting tax benefits. They get a good return on their money. And if you're doing something that's middle of the road, which is what we suggest, they don't also have a lot of risk. The next thing is an ESOP. It's an employee stock ownership plan. And again, what we have here, without getting into the details of it, because there's a lot of information there on it, if you want to go down to the library, they have all sorts of books and records and all sorts of pamphlets on ESOPs and how they work. The thing you have to realize with an ESOP on the employee stock ownership plan, this usually only works in companies where they have over $500,000 a year in payroll. But you're going to find an ESOP can supply equity capital, cash, or money to liquidate the owner. You're also going to find you can use it for expansion, but it does assist in financing an acquisition, or for those of you trying to sell a company, it's a great way to go. If you happen to have an ESOP, you're also going to find you may be able to contact one of the large merger and acquisition firms. Look in the yellow pages. Most of the better, larger merger and acquisition firms are also in the business of ESOPs. They have a division within their company where they handle ESOPs, manage programs, set them up. They're very nice to work with. They can provide other types of financing, but they can also give you advice and assistance in how to handle financing using the ESOP. The next one is an employee stock ownership trust, and it has different laws as to how that is controlled and who controls it and how it can be funded. But the key thing is it also is the same as number three in that you can use it for financing, and it's a great tool to use. And incidentally, one of the things I forgot to mention, it also not only is a great source of cash, it's a great tax write-off. It's also a great benefit for employees. And we've been involved in these over the years. And although they don't work too well on the people maybe that are in their 20s and 30s, but as people start to think about getting older, maybe at 40 and so, we find it starts to become a little more effective and they become more interested in how much they have vested in their stock ownership programs. We find they work very well. Financing above $1 million A. There's two different categories. One is offshore financing, and I'm sure you've heard it time and time again. And what we're telling you is to contact National Business Marketing Corporation or National Business Finance Corporation. And what will happen is by contacting one of the companies that I own, they will provide information for you, and they will show you how to do this, or if you want them to do it, they can. There's two general sources we run into, and one is offshore, which means it's basically it could be through the Caribbean. It could be off the islands off the coast of England, or you could be talking about the Pacific. But again, what we like to do is sit down and talk to you and warn you about the difficulties in this area and the fact that most of the programs you hear about in these areas don't exist. In other words, it's just a fantasy. The next one are European sources, and we're talking about working through programs. We're working with people in Switzerland. We're talking about Amsterdam and also normally London. And again, there are different sources back there. And again, you end up with the same flaky-wakey factor. There are some that are good and are real and do exist. And there are other ones that don't. Now, for those of you who want to come back and ask me about sources of money from the people in the Middle East, the Arabs, we're always talking about the Arabs. I have a lot of friends that are Arabs, and all the years I've been working with these people, I have never worked with one that was in the financing business, and I'm sure they are. But I'm sure what's happened over the years is they've turned their financing, the handling of the financing, over to the banking institutions in Switzerland and also in Amsterdam. Again, that's just our belief. Next thing is a CPA, accountant, financer fees. A lot of you that go out don't realize the different levels of financing available in all categories. You're going to find, A, if you start a business or buy a mom and pop, CPAs and accountants usually want a cash retainer in front. If you buy a business making over $50,000, they ask you to pay at the close of escrow. You're also going to find that most of them will accept payment after the close. Now, why do they do this? Very simple. They'd like to have you as a customer or as a client. And they like ones that pay their bills. They also like to handle the larger companies. And if you want to get this financing, just ask. You're also going to find attorneys finance for fees. And again, I'm sure the attorneys and the CPAs and the brokers are going to come after me for even bringing this up. But since it is a source of financing, you should be aware of it. If you start a business or buy a mom and pop, again, you have the same problem. They usually want a cash retainer. Why? Because they want to make sure you can pay. Once you've established something, like you buy a going business, you're going to find that you get to pay at the end of the close. They don't ask you for money in front. Why? Most of the time, they assume you're a winner because you're buying a large company. You're going to be in a position to pay them at the close. Why? Because you have this large company. You're also going to find they will accept payment after the close. They'll carry back a note. In fact, some of them, attorneys or CPAs, might even like a piece of the business. We usually would rather pay them. We have enough partners. The other category we have here is the business broker, financer fees. And we're in the brokerage. We also have a lot of good friends that are in the business brokerage. I'm sure they're going to kill me as they hear me talking about this. But you have to realize they will also finance their fees. The fee that we have in a business, in a sale, is usually about 10%. This fee represents a large percent or all of the down payment. Because although the average down payment on the smaller businesses is about 25%, as you start to get up in the business that are netting hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars, quite often the down payment starts to approach 10%. In that case, it means that maybe you should start to be treating your business broker a lot nicer in the beginning, because most business brokers do very well. And since they do well, many of them are willing to finance as long as they get part of it in cash. The other reason they're willing to finance, it helps to defray part of the taxes they have to pay, especially those that are up in the higher tax brackets. Number nine, we're talking about creating a note here. Now, we're talking about creating a note against real estate. What we do is we offer to create a note secured by the real estate you own, and you can use it as a down payment, or you can use it as additional security. Somebody's worried about the business. They don't want to have maybe the total business as security, and they'll ask you for real estate as security. Or you can have a note with the real estate as security. And what you have to realize, you say, gosh, I already have a first mortgage or first deed of trust on my real estate. Well, that's fine. You can still put a second on it or offer to create a second. I'm not going to get involved in the tax ramifications, but the reason we offer to do it is you don't want to create it, put it on the business, and then use it. It is much better to create it in the escrow or closing. Again, you can discuss that with your CPA. Next thing is creating a note on personal assets. And a lot of people forget about this category. Offer to create a note secured by personal assets. Use this down payment or additional security. And again, by personal assets, I don't care if you use all the clothing that you as a male or female happen to have. I don't care if you take all the items you have in your garage, in your lawnmower, or your boat, whatever it happens to be. You're going to find that you can use personal items. And if you don't believe it, you ought to go out and find what the average buyer used when they bought that business. Again, you don't have to put this in the offer in writing. Why don't you discuss this verbally when you're in a negotiation? Next thing is creating a note against the auto. Offer to create a note secured by your automobile. Use it as a down payment again or additional security. Even if it already has a loan on it, we're putting it up as additional security on an item. And again, we talked about the motorhome, the boat, the plane, whatever it happened to be. Again, why do we use these things? Because as long as you get yourself in a position in the creation of this note and you're getting in a business where you can pay that loan back and do it safely, you're okay. If the thing is too close, I'm going to suggest you not put anything else up. Why? You're going to end up losing it. Refinancing real estate. And one thing we don't think about. Many times the real estate that's included in the transaction has been around for 10, 15, 20 years, and although they may have started off with a 20, 30-year loan, the loan only has 5 years to go. And what we can do is refinance it. And by refinancing the real estate in the transaction, we can use the cash for working capital or as a down payment in the transaction. And that's done quite often also. Sale and leaseback. We do this probably at least once or twice a month. And what we're doing here is we're selling the real estate in the transaction to an investment group for a price based on what? The return. And what you're going to find is in the transaction, you may find that the going rate on what you're having to pick up the real estate for is maybe $300,000. You may find that by selling it to an investment group and guaranteeing a return, you may be able to pick up another $100,000 or $200,000 in cash that you can use in the transaction. Again, we're not ripping anybody off. What we're doing is we're going to an investment group and we're selling them the real estate package based on not what we paid for it, but we're basing it on what the return is we're going to be guaranteeing back to that investment group. Again, I use the word guarantee sparingly because we're trying to guarantee as little as possible. I also don't want you to think we're trying to rip somebody off, because what we're also doing is we're fully disclosing what we're doing in each transaction. We're disclosing our profit. Now, again, we're talking about using the extra cash here to finance your business purchase or working capital or expansion, or it could be the startup. On page 623, under financing, We have number 15, industrial revenue bonds, which is another great source, especially on financing startups. Cities and states will float bonds to entice you to move your new business to their area. They'll do this if your business creates jobs or creates revenue for the area. It's an area over the years that we have found more startup companies use than existing, and it's really fantastic because these bonds are at favorable rates to you. In fact, many times the real estate that's involved, the land, the building, will be at a token rate, $10 a year, maybe $100 a year. And you're also going to find at the end of the 10, 15, 20-year period, whatever's agreed to, in many cases they will actually deed over or turn over the land and buildings to you at a token amount. You're also going to find that they'll set up the tax rate to be very favorable. They'll set up special incentives for people who want to go to work there. But you're going to find it's good for startup and existing businesses. Again, with a lot of manufacturing companies, distributorships, you're going to find you can move to almost any area of the United States without influencing your market. The next area, number 16, real estate guarantees, is a program that we've had for the last couple of years. And it's basically broken down in two areas. One time you're going to find that the people putting up real estate as guarantees on a business are going to ask for cash. And the reason we have this program is a number of times people that own a business are going to say, gosh, I'd like to have some other security than the business. And again, what we're trying to stay away from basically, especially with sellers, is we really don't want to have to give them the security of the business and real estate or some of the security. And the reason for that is we don't believe they're entitled to that. Because why should we as buyers, if I happen to be the buyer, why should I have to give the person, the seller of the business, more security than they have right now? In other words, there's a risk factor involved in being in business as a seller. And if they're able to sell it to somebody else and take out the risk completely, I don't think it's fair. Or if they want to do it that way, then they're not entitled to very much interest payment on the amount of money they receive. But on this, we have many real estate owners will guarantee part of a business or all of the purchase financing with their real estate. In other words, they're at risk also in case you goof up that business. So we usually verify this and check it out quite carefully to make sure that our good real estate friends don't get ripped off. They're usually asking for a 10% cash return on the equity pledged, and they'll deliver land, apartments, shopping centers, industrial, whatever you happen to want. And we have found we can deliver this by state, by area, any place in the United States, probably in the world as a guarantee, whatever the seller happens to want. And for those of you listening to this that happen to be sellers, this enables you as a seller not to have to worry about that transaction. You can either take it as additional security or as a security instead of the security of your business. Again, almost picking and choosing what you want. The next category is a category for those of you that say, my gosh, I'm trying to buy this business and I really can't afford the 10% return. It's going to kill my cash flow. Well, there's another program we've developed in the last couple of years with people that own real estate. And what we have is here, the people will again guarantee all or part. But you're going to find, in this case, we're going to promise them or give them a 6% cash return on the equity they put up. And then also tax benefits from the corporation which you can pass back to them. And also a possible piece of the action. And even if you have to give them a piece of the action, you're going to find every one of them, or almost every one of them, will agree to a buyout clause. As we go to the next page, number 18, we start to talk about savings and loan guarantees. And we're talking about savings and loans actually pledging part or all of their assets, not all, but part of their assets for a return. And what will happen is we're saying the savings and loan will guarantee the loan on the purchase of a business for an annual fee. Sometimes they want a piece of the action. Again, we have found we give them less often than the average individual a piece of the action. They don't ask for it very often, but quite often they will go along with 5%. So instead of having to pay $10,000 on $100,000 of real estate, in this case we're only paying $5,000. Insurance company guarantees. An insurance company will guarantee the loan on a purchase of a business for an annual fee. Sometimes they want a piece of the action. In other words, you can have an insurance company with their massive assets put this up. And what it does is enable you as a buyer to put the transaction together because of the guarantee, get a much lower interest rate. For those of you that are sellers, it enables you then to sleep soundly after you sell your business without worrying whether you have to take it back or not because it's been guaranteed by maybe one or more sources. Trusts, pension plan guarantee. A trust or pension plan or fund will guarantee the loan on the purchase of business for an annual fee. Sometimes, again, they want a piece of the action. So we're talking about all sorts of things that you never read about, but these are things we work in. And the reason we've developed these programs over the last few years is we don't like to have people come back to us and say, gosh, I can't do something for the following reason. Because it's always been our belief, if the business happens to be good or the concept good in starting a business, there has to be a way of doing it. And we have found over the years that maybe it takes us a couple of days or maybe a week to develop a program. But if we do have something or you run into something that really seems impossible, do come back to us and give us a chance to maybe develop a program in the area, or maybe we have one. Next carrier is a stockbroker. We find stockbrokers have many clients that will invest for a joint venture, and most of you don't think about the stockbroker. Because what they do is a lot of times they'll have a business owner, and the business owner will go to them and say, hey, I'd like to invest my money in the stock market. And again, they don't have the money in the stock market all the time, or sometimes they'll pull the money out of the market, and it gives a chance, the stockbroker, a chance to make some more money. And you're going to find that quite often we can get very favorable rates. Very seldom do they ask for a piece of the business, but if they do, you can build in a buyout clause. Again, use your stockbroker. The last one in this category, and probably one we should have used over and over again, is mommy, daddy, friends, relatives. And again, we said probably we should have started here. And again, you don't have to borrow money from them. If you happen to have a friend, a relative, a mom, dad, whoever happened to be, a member of the family that happens to have a good financial statement or maybe better than yours, but just having them agree to joint venture and go ahead with you, you're going to find you're going to open up all the doors to brokerage offices, to banks. If your partner then, or family member, whoever it happens to be, decides to back out later, maybe you back out, at least it's opened the door for you. Again, in some cases, we find also we'll go into business with these people with a buyout clause. But all I'm saying is it's a fantastic source, and we think you ought to consider it.